We have residents.
It's just good morning. I mentioned last weekend that there are three Epiphany events. We celebrate on Epiphany and then we kind of stretch out also throughout the 3 weeks. And on Epiphany Day, which was 2 weekends ago, we celebrated the appearance of the star to the Magi, bringing the Magi to come to adore the Lord. Last weekend we celebrated the baptism of the Lord. And this week we have the third one, the wedding feast of Cana, in the gospel that we read today. It's explicitly an Epiphany event, right? It says, "And so he revealed his glory, and his disciples began to believe in him." All well and good. I hope you remember all that, because there will be a quiz later, and I don't want you to fail. Now, what I want to say today is something that I started to mention last weekend, that all three of these events also have symbolism of a new creation in them. The easiest is the Magi. There's new star. Okay, boom, new creation, new star, right? And then last weekend we talked about how the dove coming upon Christ was a reference to Noah and the dove coming upon the new creation after the flood. Now today, what happens, we don't actually catch this half of the verse in the beginning of the gospel. It should be there. It says, on the third day, there was a wedding at Cana in Galilee. Third day from what? John doesn't say. And the reason for that is because he wants you to think about the resurrection, which is the new creation, right? And then you get to the end, and it's 6 stone water jars representing the 6 days that God worked to create the world. And then Jesus takes that and transforms the natural to the supernatural, the water to wine, to make a new creation. This is all review, and it's just leading us into the idea of the moral virtues, which, as I said, we're going to be talking about during these weeks, especially the cardinal virtues. And today we're going to talk about everyone's least favorite virtue, which is temperance. And what is temperance? Temperance is the virtue that moderates our pleasure and our desire. Moderates it how? In accordance with faith and reason. Now, that doesn't sound like a whole terribly interesting virtue, and I wouldn't blame you if you thought that it was kind of prudish and not very attractive. I'm going to get to the beauty of temperance later on in the homily, but first I want to talk about this idea that temperance moderates pleasure based on faith and reason. Okay. It doesn't squash it. It doesn't kill it. It moderates it. Because in fact, sometimes the virtue of temperance tells you to enjoy yourself more. People think that the church just stands up here and says, no, 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 no. Right? And to that I say, ironically, no. Okay. Because a lot of times the church is telling you to go enjoy yourself more. Right? Every major holiday, every feast day, every Sunday even, the church says, enjoy yourself. Feast, relax, partake of the good things that God has made. Have some joy in your life. This is the day that you're supposed to do it. In fact, dear brothers and sisters, it's wrong to fast on Sundays by apostolic precept. It always drives me nuts when people are like, oh, I'm not going to cheat on Sundays of Lent. Chad, that goes back to the apostles. That's not cheating. That's not cheating. That's a law from the apostles themselves that you don't fast on Sundays. Now, if you gave up something else for Lent, like shopping on Amazon, I don't think every Sunday you should go buy a bunch of stuff on Amazon. Okay. But Sundays are supposed to be a day of rest and feasting. We even see this in the life of St. Benedict. St. Benedict, when he was a young man, very, very zealous, went to go live in a cave as a hermit, and he was living in complete fast, and he had no idea what day it was. And one day, a priest climbed down the cliff with a picnic basket. And he came to Benedict and said, today you must feast. And Benedict said, why? He said, because today is Easter Sunday. And so the priest sat down and they feasted together. And Benedict, who had been fasting for so long, understood that it was his moral obligation to feast on Easter. Sometimes people will come to the confessional and be like, oh, I committed the sin of gluttony. How? Well, I ate more than normal on Christmas. That's supposed That's what you're supposed to do. Now, is it still possible to commit the sin of gluttony on Christmas Day? Sure. If you come to me and say, I ate 5 pies. All right, you went a little too far. But in general, we're supposed to enjoy ourselves more. And we see Jesus doing this exactly today, right? As a wedding. A wedding's supposed to be a time of celebration. When they ran out of wine, Jesus didn't go around saying, you shouldn't be drinking anyway. He went and turned water into 150 gallons of more wine. Not to encourage drunkenness, the Lord would never encourage sin, but to encourage celebration. To encourage celebration. Okay, so that's faith. Faith tells us that we should feast on certain days. It also tells us we should fast on certain days, right? And if you eat as much as normal on these days, you're doing it wrong. Lent, Advent, every Friday of the year, unless it's a solemnity, which turns the Friday into a Sunday. And especially Good Friday. Speaking of things that make me want to rip my hair out, people fast every Sunday of Lent and then have a blowout party on Good Friday. Okay. You want to see me like climb my ceiling and turn my head around and start hissing at people. That's what goes on. Because dear brothers and sisters, we're not supposed to do that. Okay. It's the most important fast day of the year. But every Friday is supposed to be a time of fast. And notice that the church always puts the fast before the feast. Always. Because the cross comes before the resurrection. Advent before Christmas. Lent before Easter. Friday before Sunday. Okay? Now, we also have to be guided when it's not a day that the faith tells us we should fast or feast. We also have to be guided by our reason, by our clear thinking. I want to be very clear that there's a difference between natural reason and rationalization. Okay? I'm going to use an example. It's my birthday. It's not really my birthday. I'm using this as an analogy. It's my birthday. Is it reasonable for me to have a piece of cake? Yes. The Saints just lost and I'm depressed. Is it reasonable for me to eat a cake? No. Okay. No. Now, in that moment, can I convince myself that it's reasonable? Yes. And that's the difference between reason and rationalization. Just as you should never go shopping for groceries when you're hungry, so also you should never rely on yourself to clearly think when you're in the midst of impulse. Whether it's impulse for food, impulse for drink, impulse for social media, impulse for TV, any kind of pleasure, you need to set the rule when you're thinking clearly and then hold to it when you're trying to convince yourself otherwise. But sometimes reason says we should feast more. Man, I've had a really hard day. Man, I did a lot of work outside today, you know. Maybe I should rest more, etc. And dear brothers and sisters, I want to also be clear that the rule of reason should be about our health, right? When it comes to food, this is not about looking good at the beach or in a Mardi Gras dress. This is about doing what is right for our health, what is moral. Blessed Carlo Acutis, who is about to be canonized a saint the weekend after Easter, was a young man. He recently passed away, a teenager. And, you know, as I read his life, I was like, okay, well, he's, you know, a devout teenager and everything. I wasn't really impressed until I came across one thing that made me suddenly realize this young man was a saint. And that was that he loved playing video games, but he knew that video games could be addictive. So he set a particular time, I think it was 1 hour, a particular time every day to play video games. And when that time ended, he stopped on the button every day for years. He didn't say, one more round. He didn't say, 5 more minutes. He didn't say, let me go save. He stopped. That's incredible. I'm in my 40s. I'm an adult. I'm a priest. I play video games. I don't stop. I don't stop when it's time to stop. How many of you watch Netflix and you're like, one more episode, right? I mean, come on. He stopped every day. Restrained himself to say, this is what's reasonable and this is where I'm going to stop. It's incredible. And it showed to me his great sanctity. And so again, this is about any pleasure. Any kind of pleasure we experience on earth, there needs to be
of moderation.
I would say that 90% of the times we're tempted to overdo it instead of underdo it. Now, if you have depression, you have anhedonia, if you're feeling guilt or shame, you might want to punish yourself. And then temperance will say, no, you really should relax and enjoy yourself more. But because pleasure is naturally attractive to us, if we're in a healthy place, we're naturally going to want to overdo it rather than underdo it. So yeah, most of the time, temperance is about reining in rather than pushing forward. But I want to be very clear that it does, in fact, do both. It pushes you and limits you. It keeps you to where pleasure is reasonable and faithful. Okay? Now, what that rule is, how much you should eat, how much you should drink, how much video games you should play, how much TV you should watch, what that rule is different for every person. And that's why I can't tell you up here what you're supposed to do. It'd be easier. I could just tell you, eat this much per day, watch this much TV per day. I can't. We hear today in the second reading, there are different kinds of spiritual gifts, but the same Spirit. St. Benedict uses explicitly this verse in his rule to talk about how everybody's rule of what they eat or drink is different. It's different. And temperance will tell you that. Just like there are different rules for different days, there are different rules for different people. I'll give you an example. If an NFL linebacker on game day ate as much as a U.S. women's gymnast, that would not be temperance. That would be dumb. And if a U.S. women's gymnast ate as much as an NFL linebacker on a day that she was competing, again, not temperance. For some people, and I want you to hear this, for some people, the rule of temperance means you can't have any of some pleasures. If you're a recovering alcoholic, the temperate thing is to not drink at all. If you're struggling with video game addiction, the temperate thing to do is not play at all. If you are single, the temperate thing to do is to have no marital pleasure at all. I'm not going to spell out what marital pleasure is, but you can figure it out. Okay. If you're married, it's to have it only with your spouse and only at times when it's for the good of your marriage. Right? The reality, dear brothers and sisters, is that we need to set that rule and know that rule. And we do know that rule. If we're honest with ourselves, we know that rule most of the time. And there might be a time where we think, oh, maybe I can have this much? And then we wake up the next morning, we're like, oh, I overdid it. Right? But then from that point on, you know that that's overdoing it. So don't justify it or rationalize it next week. Do y'all understand that? Okay. Like half of you are like, no. All right. See, now you're the one saying no. You see that? You see how that works? All right. Now, dear brothers and sisters, the reason this virtue is so beautiful is because if every time we feel an impulse, we just give in, we just give in, we just give in, we just give in, that's a form of slavery. In fact, if every time we feel an impulse, we give in, what do we call that today? Addiction. Addiction. And in these terms, when we're talking about the addiction developing, not already having it, it's not only addiction, it's sin and it's vice. We have to put a gap of reason and faith between impulse and consent to say, is this reasonable? Is this faithful? Is this what God wants? And if not, then we have to be faithful to saying no. And if we do that, there comes a point, not in me, I don't have this, but I've seen it in others, there comes a point where you no longer even have to say no. Because your desires themselves have been healed. And you no longer even desire that which is not good for you. I've met people like this. They're like, I don't even want nachos. That doesn't appeal to me. And when they get up off the floor after I punch them in the face, right, then I say, how does that even work? I don't understand. Are you insane? It's nachos. It's incredible, right? And they're like, no, I mean, like, I know it's bad for me, and so it doesn't appeal to me at all, any more than drinking battery acid would appeal to you. That's what temperance ultimately does. It doesn't just restrain our desires. It heals them. So that we only even desire what is holy and healthy. And dear brothers and sisters, on that day when we have a harmony between psychology, physiology, and spirituality, when our desires are brought into line with what is reasonable and what is faithful, with what is holy and what is healthy, then we see the beauty of temperance. Then we see the beauty of this great virtue. And then we know what it means to be made into a new creation. God bless you all.